story coming out there. Now, there have been... It was in the press a little while ago, and Andrew's going to perhaps go into this a little bit more for us. There were inclinations of this story a couple of years ago, but it's all sort of come out today. And it's very interesting because of the way that now Sterling Allen was, like I say, he'd set himself up in the sort of free energy business. He was supposedly, wanting to help people bring out inventions and ideas within the free energy world. And he was involved in quite big conferences involved in that. And he was involved in a conference that was held in Amsterdam, was it, that big conference? Mm. That one, a few years back, 2011 it was, yeah.
2012.
And
is that the global breakthrough event?
I think it was. And Andrew was at that particular conference, and Dr. Judy Wood was there as well. And Dr. Wood did tell me that Sterling Allen was acting really peculiarly towards her. Now, it's not unusual for people to be a bit, have issues with wrongly to have issues around Dr. Wood, but he was a fellow speaker at this conference, and he was just saying some rather odd things to her. So we've had a bit of a heads up on Sterling Allen for some time that he's perhaps not quite what he makes out to be, and sure enough,
and that turns out to be true
in many more ways than we expected. Yeah, I mean, we just thought he was a cover-up agent, which clearly he was. But could it be that he was a compromised cover-up agent who was being put into this position, specifically? Anyway, let's go into this a little bit more. I think we have Andrew with us now. Andrew's with us. So, Andrew, what was you had a heads up on this Sterling Allen thing a couple of years back?
Hi, everybody. I went to this conference. I was invited to speak at the 2012 conference as well. Can you still hear me okay?
Yeah, definitely.
Great.
So I was invited to speak at this conference as well, which was 2012, and it was actually in Hilversum, which is a little bit of a way from Amsterdam, not too far, I think it's about 20 miles or something like that. And it's the sort of media capital of the Netherlands. That's why the guys that organised it put it there. I remember them telling us. And I understand that Sterling Allen, he was sort of quite well embedded in the organisation of that conference, because that was a big conference. I think it was like 3-day event or 2.5 days. They had meals, and it was a nice venue, and I think there were about 200 people there, between 100 and 200 people, I think. And, they've flown over a lot of people from the States. I think they've probably flown over about, without counting, about 10 people from the States, maybe more. So that sort of coordination doesn't come cheap. And Sterling Allen was one of the people there. I never actually spoke to him in person. It's kind of one of those situations where, I just didn't really have any particular desire to speak to him. We'd already exchanged, or I think Dr. Wood had exchanged one or two messages with him because of the 9/11 and energy connection, which didn't give us a good feeling. And I can't remember when we became aware, but of course he was buddies with Stephen E. Jones, who I know that you and I, and I think we've obviously spoken about Stephen E. Jones, the physicist from Brigham Young University.
Yeah.
I guess you've probably spoken about him separately. I can't remember when I first learned of this association, but I think it came about as a result of us pointing out that Jones was putting out false information with regard to 9/11. And Sterling Allen defended Jones, saying, oh, you know, he's a good friend of mine, he wouldn't do such a thing, you know, da-di-da-di-da.
Friend, eh?
Oh, yeah, and they lived in the same neighbourhood for maybe at least a couple of years, maybe longer. They're both Mormons as well.
I was going to say, are they part of the same church?
I don't know if it was like the exact same church, but I know that they were living within a few miles of each other for several years, and so that I think was probably one of the first red flags that went up with Sterling Allen, that he was into all this energy stuff, but he wasn't, you know. Again, I get very suspicious when people are talking about free energy, and then, you know, they're shown this connection between the Hutchinson effect and 9/11. And which is blindingly obvious once you've seen all the pictures, yeah, and you've heard the witness accounts and so forth, and you've looked at what John Hutchinson has done, it becomes really obvious that this is a very, very strong connection. And you know, I've spoken about this at length with you and with other people. And so Sterling Allen again fell into that category. In other words, he would not embrace the evidence of 9/11. Being related to energy phenomena. You know, he was kind of
willfully denying it.
Well, initially he was, and then I think later he sort of seemed to take it on board a bit more, but then again he tried to describe it as a theory, and I mean, I eventually, when we got a bit fed up of all of this, and I posted an article in September 2013, which of course is well over a year ago now, and I've called it Chilling Out About 9/11 with Sterling D. Allen and Stephen E. Jones. And this title came about because of a message that I'd received from Sterling Allen when I sent him some questions to try and confirm some of these things, which, you know, I'd either heard about or, you know, read about elsewhere. I asked him, for example, what his association with Stephen E. Jones was, and he clarified that he did confirm that he was friends with Stephen E. Jones, and he said he was a good guy and everything. And what happened was we did this BEM conference, and there's a couple of peculiar things that happened within that. I distinctly remember Judy sitting with him the event at the BEM conference. There was a flight of stairs, you know, and she was sat with him on the stairs going through her book. So he had one-to-one personal tuition on some of the contents of Where Did the Towers Go? So he got a face-to-face meeting with Dr. Judy.
Yeah, did clarify anything he wasn't quite understanding or didn't, you know, quite get.
Right.
Yeah.
So you know, he was given a sort of a good opportunity to go through things. And then what happened, I think it was maybe the next day, or maybe this had already happened, but after, you know, before this meeting on the stairs, but what happened at the BEM conference, which was quite peculiar, was Dr. Wood's talk was split into three parts. It should have been two, but it ended up being three, and it was split across 2 days in the end. And then what she did was she played this clip about tritium. Now tritium is this form of hydrogen which is seen in certain types of nuclear reactions. Typically, those which seem to be occurring in cold fusion experiments, and it doesn't occur in all of them, and it hasn't been detected all the time, but it's one of these fingerprints in these reactions. And it was also found in the water from the bottom, which was sampled from the bottom of World Trade Center 6 just after 9/11, in unusually high quantities, about 50 times normal. So we had already sort of pegged it that tritium was quite an important factor in, you know, showing that something very unusual happened in the destruction of the World Trade Center, which we'd already seen that anyway. And this was what was Dr. Wood was pointing out in her talk. So she played this on day one, and then the talk was stopped because they had to finish for lunch or dinner or something. And then she did a recap on the second day, and she played this trip of tritium again, or she tried to play it. She did play it. And then what happened at that point, and when she started playing this clip, which was to do with Stephen E. Jones, Sterling Allen got up out of the audience, went to the front, and he whispered something in Dr. Wood's ear. You know, I saw him do this, so I couldn't hear what he said. And so I said to Dr. Wood afterwards, "What did he say to you?" And she said, "Oh, he said, you played that clip about tritium yesterday, you don't need to play it again." Which, of course, to me, is an indication that he knew that this was very important, and he thought he'd take it upon himself to try and discourage Dr. Judy from highlighting this evidence again to the audience, because it was so important. Why would anyone get up in the middle of a lecture, go to the front, go to the speaker and say, "You don't need to play this clip again, you played it yesterday"?
And I believe that when he was saying it as well, he was a little bit angry as well. He wasn't, you know, it wasn't just like, "Oh, just thought I'd remind you that you already played that." So,
right,
you
know, right.
Wasn't like he was trying to sort of say, "Oh, did you make a mistake there or something?"
Right.
It was like, "You've already played that. What are you doing it for again?"
Yeah. I think.
So he was a bit curt about the whole thing.
As I recall, I think you're absolutely right. So this only added, really.
That's really surprised her. She was quite shocked by
right,
that.
Right. And then also at the end of this this talk, where Dr. Wood had been through the evidence that Stephen E. Jones knew what he was doing, he knew that what he was putting out with regard to thermite and all that stuff was, he knew that that was false. It wasn't just that he thought it was true and didn't agree with Dr. Wood's research. He already knew that that was false. And that was brought out in relation to, you know, what he did with the cold fusion research. Mm-hmm. And then again, right at the end, Sterling Allen puts his hand up and he says, "Oh, I can't remember the exact words, but it's on YouTube. This, if you go and watch the BEM presentation on YouTube, you'll see this right, very near the end." Sterling.
But he says he's a friend of mine. Is it that?
That's point? Right. He says, "Oh, Stephen E. Jones is a friend of mine. Are you saying is this some type of infiltration or whatever? What is it? You know?" And he says, "Well, I'm going to go back to him and discuss this with him in great detail. And you know, I think this is really important." And da da da. And it sounded at that point like Sterling Allen had a bit of a catharsis. You know, and he'd realised. That Jones was deliberately putting out false information, you know, and that he would try and work it out with Jones as to what was going on.
If I remember, sorry,
right.
Did you want to
finish? No, carry on.
I was just going to say, if I remember correctly, that interruption, or not interruption, that what he said at the end of that, you know, "I'm going to go back and I'm going to ask him about that." And I think he said, "And I'm going to come back and tell you what he says." You know, and in a way, that in saying that, it was almost, it kind of, he was kind of trying his best there to save Stephen Jones's skin, I think. Because Dr. Wood had really played, a severe blow there to everything that in combination with the whole of her, because that's, you know, an excellent presentation. It really, gets to the grips with all the major points, and it presents them very clearly, very concisely, very intelligently, and it really gets you thinking, and I think that was the very least that he could do there to try to scrape any kind of dignity back for Jones in any way by just saying, you know, making the "I'm a really good friend" story, and "I know he's really great, I'm going to have a talk to him, I'll get back to you on it, you know, and let you know, because he can't possibly be a bad guy. And so maybe for a lot of people in the room there, or anybody listening to that presentation, it kind of gives Jones a little, you know, perhaps a little bit of leeway or element of,
you
know, that where people can think that, there might still be an element of, he might be a nice guy. I'm not going to, especially people who are kind of clinging to the whole 9/11 kind of rubbish.
Yeah, but it's just weird because, you know, Dr. Wisberg is evidence. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not any kind of fanciful.
And it's irrefutable.
Irrefutable, yeah. So therefore, the website that Stellan Allen set up was called Pez Wiki, which was supposed to be a database for everything related to free energy, to these things. And so you'd think somebody setting that kind of stuff up would at least give a little bit of credence to Dr. Wood, you know.
Well, yeah, I think the story gets sort of slightly more complicated from there, but I think you're absolutely right what Debbie was saying about, trying to save Jones's face, you know, and try and wipe the sort of dirt away to some extent. That's probably an accurate sort of assessment. And, I didn't really think of it like that, but that's probably more or less what he was doing. You know, I think what Stirling Allen did was, I think he managed to convince a few people that he'd never seen this argument before, and he was shocked, you know, and he really was going to try and take it on board. But you know,
even though the day before he'd like literally got up to say to Dr. Wood, you've played this clip before.
Right.
You know, it's like, I haven't heard this evidence before, but before I say this, I'm saying, this is important, don't show it again.
Right. Yeah, so, you know, I think Stirling Allen was pretty much clued in, and maybe he'd already been primed and, sprung as a kind of damage limitation, device or decoy or whatever you want to call it, before he even got to the conference.
Or a filtering device.
Yeah.
A filtering device for free energy technologies.
So that's like Gatekeeper. Yeah, that's exactly what he set himself up as.
Yeah, I mean,
if I remember, he's read Ice interview where I first came across him. He was basically saying, if you've got a device, don't go to the patent office, come to me.
Right.
You know, that's basically what he was saying. So therefore, a filter is an excellent analogy of what he was doing.
Yeah, I mean, his website, whether it's done for benign reasons or not, it is a collection of information for somebody else to look at. Whether that somebody else is just an innocent, you know, researcher, or whether it's somebody from the CIA or wherever, they can still access the website just the same. And I've been told by at least one other person that he posted his stuff on that website, which he'd been asked not to post, you know, private information. I've heard that from at least one other person. And the same essentially happened with Dr. Wood. Not so much that he posted private or personal information about Dr. Wood, but what he did was he scanned pages from the book without permission, put them into an article, and described this, used this phrase, Tesla death ray, it was either in the title of the article or in the text somewhere, I can't remember which, and Dr. Wood had to write to him and say, look, I'd rather you didn't use these scanned images without permission, can you take them out please? And initially he refused, and then he sort of backed down and he took them out. But then I think later he put some more back up again. So, you know, if you're somebody who's interested in the truth about things, and one of the researchers asks you, you know, with a reason to not do something, like, can you take some of those images off, please, you know, and change this article a bit, you know, if you're trying to support that person, then you do as they request. You don't antagonise them, you know, which is what he ended up doing by putting, I think he did something, he took one of the images down and then used another one or something, you know, and just complained about that. So, you know, it's just basically very, very impolite, discourteous, etc., etc., not trying to be helpful, actually trying to misrepresent things, and so forth. And going back to this thing where he said he'd go and, you know, have a word with Stephen E. Jones when he got back, well, it seems he did do that, because I think the day after the conference finished, Sterling had got back to the US, I think it was a day or two, or very, very soon after this conference finished, we see this letter from Stephen E. Jones going up on Sterling Allen's website, and I linked this in my article, saying that Pons and Fleischmann knew that it wasn't cold fusion, you know, or they knew it wasn't fusion. Fleischmann finally admitted this before his death, you know, according to Jones, and that's just totally untrue, because Pons and Fleischmann thought for about a year after their initial announcement that there was some type of nuclear fusion going on, but then they kind of retracted that, you know, on further evidence, as further evidence came to light, and they thought there was nuclear process but not necessarily fusion. And so Jones was lying about that and painting them, and continued to paint them in a bad light. And I think this was after Fleischmann was dead, so, you know, he could hardly defend himself, you know.
Yeah.
So that was, and in fact, Jones didn't say much about the conference, and I don't think he said much about the presentation. He was just banging on about how he was, you know, he'd said certain things about cold fusion, and Pons and Fleischmann were, you know, not saying the right thing, you know, they were wrong and stuff like that. He certainly didn't acknowledge anything about 9/11, and neither did Sterling Allen. So we were just back to where we were before the conference. You know, Allen hadn't done anything, and later he was interviewed by Pete Santilli, that's Sterling Allen, that is, and you know, he made some remarks there which I won't repeat. This was after this situation with him scanning pages from the book and being asked to take them off his website. And he was very rude about Dr. Wood in that interview. Very rude.
But hopefully, in respect of the people that were at the conference, they'll have taken something from Dr. Wood's presentation. So it's not necessarily back to before the conference, because more people are going to be aware of her work.
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, what I meant was, I meant personally with Sterling Allen. In other words, when he made that announcement at the end that he was going to talk to Jones, for a short time, I genuinely thought the guy was, you know, was honest, and he would take that forward, and he would come back, and he would realise that Jones was wrong, and he would admit that Jones was wrong, you know, and that Jones was lying and deliberately covering it up. I had this sort of vain hope that, just in relation to Sterling Allen, that he would do that, but of course he was just being just as dishonest as Jones was. But yeah, as regards the conference, that I think it was, it did expose a lot of people to that information. Certainly one person we mentioned, of course, is Paul Hellyer, because he's been one of the...
The Canadian defence minister.
He was a former Canadian defence minister. We spent a little bit of time with him, and I actually shared a taxi ride with him from the... hotel where he was staying to where we were doing the conference, and you know, had a little chat to him there, very, very, very brief, and he took it all on board, and in fact he did that video, I think it was last year, called Full Disclosure, and you know, he had a bookshelf of books in the background with probably, you know, 100 or 200 books on there, but the only one he held up to camera in this video that he did was Where Did the Towers Go, Brilliant. So, you know, it obviously had an impact on him.
And didn't he say that this was one of the most important books he's read?
Yeah, something along those lines. I can't remember his exact words, but he said, you know, 500 pages of meticulous evidence, looking straight at the camera and holding it up.
Yeah.
And I wrote an article about that, a short article about that. I'm thinking, well, you know, let's see. Paul Hellyer, you know, former Defence Minister for Canada, he's talked about Roswell, he's talked about aliens, he's talked about all this stuff. Why is he the only person, one of a very small number of people who is willing to actually mention this book by name, reference it, show it on camera, you know, put a link to the website? Some of the other people that won't do this, let's list them. Richard Dolan won't do it. Jim Mars won't do it. Joseph Farrell won't do it. Richard Hoagland won't do it. Stephen Greer won't do it. Linda Moulton Howe won't do it. I'm now waiting for Stanton Friedman, because I personally gave Stanton Friedman a copy of the book in September when I met him at the conference at Holmfirth, Gary Heseltine's conference. I spent a little bit of time with Stanton Friedman, who I have enormous respect for, and I like him a great deal. I'm hoping that as a nuclear physicist, he should value that book very, very highly.
Mm. Well, on a less important level than that, we sent a copy to someone who had previously been involved with Kerry Cassidy and the Camelot project.
Oh, yeah.
And he sort of moved into doing stuff with the sort of think community. And we were talking to him one evening on the show, and he was kind of referencing Jeremy Rees, alien scientist. So we were like, no, mate, you're on the wrong, you're on the wrong one there. You want to get away from that kind of idea of, looking at 9/11 from that perspective.
But
that's a wrong.
But also,
and so we sent him a copy of the book, and we.
He gave us a false address, basically.
Yeah, he never picked
really?
It up. And
Wow.
Just kept making excuses when we said, have you picked up your copy yet? Have you picked up the copy of the book yet? Oh, no, I haven't been home yet. And then we got a notification saying that it had gone sort of back to the
Sunder.
Like post office or the point, and it needed to be collected. And that was about a year ago, wasn't it? We never heard anything more.
Wow.
Well, also, you're going to take the fact that Bill from Project Camelot was heavily promoting Rebecca Roth.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
saying, you know, that
yeah.
she was the best thing since sliced bread. It's like, you know, I think that whole situation with Rebecca Roth really highlights the level of research people in the supposed research, alternative research community. It's very easy to realise that she is not what she said, just by looking at her.
Right, yeah, absolutely. And I wrote a little bit about that, because I had a bit of a run-in with Bill Ryan on his forum, and he was promoting Roth, and I think was he on her programme or somebody else's programme? But anyway, she came out with this, like, gobbledygook about the destruction of the towers. And it was just like a sort of jumble of ideas, and you know, and I pointed out that it's what she was. I put the time code up on the comment that I made in this YouTube link, and I said, "What's she on about? You know, I really don't understand what she thinks she's on about." And then Bill Ryan, he actually replied to my comment. And he actually did a transcript of this whole segment, which I was referring to, which was brilliant, because it means I didn't have to do it. And he said at the end, oh, it's perfectly clear to me, you know, or something. I said, oh, I can understand what she's on about, you know. And it's just nonsense that she's talking, you know. But the whole Rebecca Roth thing is a whole other story. It's dragged on for at least a year. I mean, going back to Sterling Allen, he's actually posted strange stuff on his own website. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen it. He actually posted a video about a year ago saying that he's waiting to be arrested for, various offences. He more or less says this in the video. And that's on his own website. And then there's also this, I can send you the link. There's also this letter which he received from his local church from which he'd been barred.
Yeah, I read that this afternoon.
Yeah, I think I put the link. Because I put the link on your Facebook thing, didn't I think? And
Nick had actually sent me before.
Oh, okay, right, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Because that's actually a different thing you sent me, but the thing Nick sent me is saying the same thing.
Right, yeah.
Basically, the church had banned him from going there, and he asked, could he stand outside and listen to the prayer? And you're thinking, what? And the fact that you said that Stephen A. Jones is, you know, that's why I initially asked that question. Are they the same church sort of thing? And it beggars belief, really.
Well, he says at that conference, when he's doing his little shout-out at the end there, that he used to live with Jones, so, you know...
Well, Andrew said he lived in the same...
They may have well lived in the... You know, he may have had a room in his house.
He's saying that they used to... Yeah, they used to live together, share a place together. I'm sure he's... It may just be that they lived in the same town and were good friends, but I thought at the end of that conference that he was saying that they were roommates, and, you know, he was putting himself that close to Jones, which, yeah, you know,
well,
very
it's just confirming
odd.
Confirming everything we
very
thought
about odd.
Mr. Jones, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, you know, this is the thing, though. This is what it kind of brought up to me, was that we know through everything that's been going in this country around the Jimmy Savile case, that people are compromised, and that even if... maybe even if they're not compromised, they are of the people in these circles that are involved in this kind of thing are all friends together.
Yeah.
And it kind of doesn't bode well for other members of the alternative media who are promoting this collapse of the buildings idea.
Or people that are known to have compromising information about are sort of steered into positions.
And then
when a situation arises, they're given a choice that they are outed to a select community and said, right, we know what you're up to, here's what you would need to do. If you don't do this, you're either dead or outed. And so you don't necessarily need to be compromised at source. The information about compromisation is available to to sources, and they use that in the event of.
Or it could be that it's not even that they're sort of, you know, told, right, you're for it, or you do the work we want you to do. It could just be that they're all just friends together, and they're all just, you know, in it together, and these are the people. This is what we're up against.
Absolutely.
Well, it's no secret that Thatcher actually sought out people of these sort of weird dispositions to have in her cat, you know, to have around this sort of thing, so she could have total control over them. And there again is the other Jimmy Savile link, where he would know about these things and sort of put forward names as to who she would have in her close circle stroke cabinet. And there's also the case of Ken Livingstone sort of coming out saying about the MI6 things, that everybody in a position of power has got some kind of videotape of them doing things they shouldn't be doing. on them sort of thing, so therefore the control grip.
There's definitely something like that going on, and we've seen this now obviously with Sterling Allen, who's got this problem which has now become much more public than it was, although he'd even posted stuff on his own website. The other thing that you mentioned a few minutes ago was that this conversation with the alien scientist or Jeremy Riss. I found out that he's also an ex-con, and he was actually caught. He was with his girlfriend in a car, and he pulled a machete on her. And he was noticed by passers-by and pulled off, and then he was arrested, and put in prison for, attempted, whatever the correct name of the offence is, I don't know what it would be in the US, but attempted. I don't think he managed to lay a finger on her, fortunately, but obviously, the guy's a nutcase. And then he was given parole. And from the information I have, he was living with his parents, and that he couldn't, he had a curfew and so forth, and he had to report, to whatever every so often. And there was a report that was published, I think, probably end of 2013 or sometime 2014, that he was rearrested because he'd broken the terms of his parole. So, and this was in a local police bulletin that somebody sent me. So, it appears that these people have misdemeanors at the very least, let's call them that. And as you were saying, and they, what seems to happen is that, there's some profiling goes on at some point in the police system. That information is then passed to a third agency and said, look, this guy's intelligent, he's got... he's got these contacts, or he's got those contacts, or he's got these interests. He's committed this misdemeanor. We can make a deal with this guy and get them to do something for us, help us with this bit of cover-up, or, post something on a website, or post these nasty remarks continually for 5 days a week, 48 weeks of the year. They'll do it for us because if they don't, we'll put them back in prison or, whatever.
Isn't his father a bigwig in the oil business?
Correct,
as well?
Yeah. He was working over in China, Jeremy Riss's father. Apparently a contractor for the CIA. He was passing certain information from his business, that he was involved in to the CIA, apparently.
Involved in nuclear.
So there are connections there.
Chemical industry,
there are
pharmaceutical industry.
Correct. Yeah, there are connections there. Yeah, to those industries and to the energy industry and so forth. So it's the same with Jones, same with alien scientists. And then I had this other guy contacted me. This was back. Let's see when I posted this. Yeah, this is back in 2012. We had this guy called Jeff Prager, who was trying to promote this idea of nuclear destruction, nuclear bombs destroying the World Trade Center of some kind.
Mini
nukes, and that I think it was a variation on that. And he wrote a message to me when I was saying, look, we know that this is a nuclear effect, but it's got nothing to do with nuclear bombs going off. If you think that, then you're wrong, basically. And he wrote back to me and he said, you're a blithering, brainless, molecularly and neurologically challenged idiot. You're known to the detectives and the police force in your community as a complete idiot. You're known to the internet as a moron of morons, the man's moron, for goodness sakes. I'm reading this from a quote. Uranium at 93 becquerels per kilogram with strontium, barium and thorium, equally off the chart, spells fission, you twit. And then he finished the message with peace, which made me chuckle. But the point why I went to the trouble of reading that out was I found out from Chris Berlin's website, Chris Berlin, another 9/11 liar, unfortunately, but nevertheless he had a page on Jeff Prager, because I think this Prager guy had hassled Chris Berlin, claiming that Chris Berlin was covering up evidence of nukes. And Chris Berlin had done a bit of research and found that this Jeff Prager was wanted by police because he'd defaulted on alimony payments, I think. You know, he'd skipped town when he owed money to his for his child protection payments or whatever they call it, or this, you know, alimony, whatever they call it. So what I read out from that message is that he was projecting things onto me that were actually his problem. In other words, he was known to the detectives and police in his community because of his, you know, misdemeanors. So
he must have thought that was the worst thing he could say then, because obviously he was feeling the pain of it all happening.
Maybe, yeah, yeah. And so this again seems to sort of unravel the psychology of some of these people, and you know, what's going through their minds. You know, so it's a really kind of, you know, murky, sordid world that these people seem to be involved in. And I think the truly depressing thing is how big it is. You know, you tend to think that, you know, there's just one or two of these people. But when you get into this stuff, they seem to be around every corner just about, you know.
And, you know, better a moron than a moron.
I think you've got a good slogan there.
Not that, you know, I wouldn't have anything against all Mormons, you know, they might be okay, I guess. You know, I don't know an awful lot apart from the Mormons.
Yeah.
But certainly Sterling Allen hasn't portrayed a very good image.
He's not done good PR for them, has he?
No, not at all. But it is. It does kind of show that you're dealing with mentally disturbed people that are. They know what they're doing is false and wrong and lies and everything, and actually I actually think that what they're doing, what the people who are kind of covering this up are doing, is even worse than what the people who did it did, in a way, because they don't even have the guts to kind of admit what's happened. They are
They're willing
to sell their souls.
This is it, and I think, you know,
this dreadful thing, and to keep the what could be such an amazing thing for humanity, for obviously this energy source which has been developed could be just the biggest
liberation of everything.
Yeah, the biggest liberation for mankind and, you know, all humankind, and just could be fantastic, and yet it's been weaponized, it's been used, and they're, you know, willing to cover that up. That's just dreadful. And all the people who have died since and because of, and especially the people in the towers who suffered under the, from the effects of what was being used to destroy the towers. It also destroyed them. And, you know, when you hear the some of the telephone calls that went on, Melissa Doy and people like this, it's just so heartbreaking that...
harrowing.
Really, really harrowing and difficult to...
When you hear Dr. Wood describing this, because, you know, she's obviously, you know, the biggest person I've come across is giving this side of the information out, you know, regardless of who did it or what did it. These people just didn't know what was happening to them. You know, and people don't jump. I mean, I was led to believe that one person jumped from the towers. And then when I came across Dr. Wood's work and saw the numbers, I was just staggered to think, that's a lot.
More than half of the people that died on the day went out of the buildings.
But wait, like, to be honest, there's one guy, the fallen guy they were called.
Falling man, yeah.
Falling man.
I found, like, maybe a report saying that they're saying that 300 fell. Mm. But that's the, you know, still that is a... far short of the, like, the 1,500 or so that...
And another thing they don't report is that when these people left the building and landed, they weren't... bits of them were all over the place, and I don't just mean within a 10-metre radius of where they initially fell. They were all over the place. Mm. you know, hands and limbs and things found everywhere. They were falling apart. And literally, they were just mush when they landed. It kind of reminded me of, you know, in Brazil, when there's the mother of the guy and she has so much plastic surgery and chemical wraps and all this kind of thing that when she actually dies and her coffin gets tipped over and just all this slurry falls out and a few bones, it's kind of like that. That I don't want to laugh about it really or make light of it, because that's just horrendous. Yeah. What was actually going on.
Yeah, I mean, it was horrendous what happened, all levels. And I think going back to what you were saying about the people that are covering this up, I think
this is it,
and I think the thing that I was going to say was, it's just that they can choose at any point to stop covering it up. They can tell the truth. They, every day when they wake up, they have a choice. They can say, look, I'm going to tell the truth here now, and are they all under threat of death? Is that much money that important to them? That they can't actually turn around and say, okay, I'm going to tell the truth today, about this, and we're going to move forward now, and we're going to, stop all this evil, What's stopping them doing that,
I think, Andrew, that people like yourself and ourselves and lots of other people out there actually have humanity in them and believe that people would do the right thing eventually. But unfortunately, I think some people just find they just find fun in the complete inhumanity. Like, what was that report? There was this young guy who goes to Eton, and I think we have to look at Eton
Mincy.
In respect to what I'm saying
Mincy.
Here, and a lot of other public schools. He was done for passing images of children being abused, but got off with it. Was not given a big sentence. He was, here we go. Look, Eton student who shared appalling abuse photos from his dorm computer of children as young as 2 being raped is spared jail. Andrew Pickard had 2,000 indecent images of children
Mincy.
On his computer.
Mincy.
He's a top lawyer's son.
Mincy.
Who sat in college dormitory sharing pictures in his chat room.
Mincy.
And he was caught aged 17. Now, that is quite young. What kind of a weird childhood has he had that he is happy to share pictures of 2-year-olds in that kind of a position? He was sharing material with an undercover police officer, and he admitted child porn charges but was given a suspended jail sentence. Now, this is a young man, clearly extremely disturbed. He's probably going to go on to have a top position within the cabinet or, be some kind of, have some kind of position in a high-ranking business or something. He'll be there because he's showing all the signs of being a completely horrible person with no... kind of moral gauge whatsoever, and willing to, for a laugh, just share this kind of horror. So someone like that, I think, would quite happily just watch people being turned to jelly and dust with a horrendous technology.
I think that must be it, that there's some way that they can remove the conscience and neutralize the humanity in somebody, whether this is something which is genetic, whether it's something that happens as a result of your upbringing, or whether it's a form of mind control, because we've heard these stories of alien abductions, and that I've heard stories. I think it's mainly Preston Nichols that tells these stories. I'm not saying he's an especially reliable witness, but he said that they were on this, you know, Montauk project. They were processing thousands of children, you know, with these horrible sort of mind control programs, and this was, you know, probably in the sort of 70s and 80s, and therefore you have to wonder if some of these people that went through these programs have now become, you know, come into adult life, and that does that explain, you know, this sort of depraved behavior and this lack of humanity and conscience, you know?
No compass whatsoever. No. In fact, it's that, you know, the more depraved and inhumane it is, the funnier it is, the more of a kick they seem to
It seems to be instilling psychopathic tendencies, though.
It's that type. It's exactly that, isn't it? So, you know, is this an engineered program, or is this something which is, you know,
or is it like people coming?
Yeah,
together?
Is it just you know, these people actually find each other in whatever ways, and then or is it that these groups of power elites have used these methods to maintain power, you know?
Because
you know, we know that then you get into all this sort of satanic ritual abuse type stuff, and you know, the sort of things to do with magic and that sort of thing, you know, that they allegedly use, and you have to wonder, you know, if that's the, well, I think that must somehow be part of it, because it's completely alien to anything that I you know, have ever sort of experienced and seen, that these people should be both subject to this and think in these ways, you know.
Yeah.
But, well, we one of our previous show hosts, Jay Parker, he was like brought up in one of these families where he was saying that, you know, this little sort of village in Delaware, like 90% of the population were like part of this rather dark cult. And so generationally, people are brought up and normalized into these situations. You know, luckily for Jay, he sort of got himself out of that situation. There's people that are from the same town that have got also the like similar experiences that are not necessarily related to Jay at the time when they grew up, but have, you know, sort of confirming the stories. So it does boggle the mind how these situations can arise, you know, from you know, just living here in Brighton or where you do, Andrew. It seems that we live in fairly normal parts of the world.
Right.
Hopefully. Yeah, the people that we encounter, they appear to be alright.
Yeah.
And then in other parts of the world, it seems that on the surface, everyone's alright, but beneath it there's a really quite dark undertone. I mean, some of the stories that Jay's told are horrific.
Really dark,
absolutely horrific. Like, he was saying that his best friend was murdered in front of him by his dad, and then the body was disposed of.
It's horrendous, isn't it? And
really,
it's really horrible. And, you know, I came into contact with somebody, actually it was a student that I saw, and they told me this story, you know, of, it wasn't as horrible as that, but it involved somebody in the police force, you know, who was actually involved in this, you know, so it was it was, it, you know, this stuff really does go on, and but we just don't really see it in directly in our lives, or very rarely will it enter our lives. It's only really
cases so high profile that they can't any longer keep it under that mountain under the carpet. Cases like Jimmy Savile, where it's a guy that spent 50 years, working at the same place, and yet the bosses of that company hadn't heard the numerous rumours going around. It's ridiculous to unfathom.
They didn't have hard evidence to convict him or that with. You think they would have just said, "Sorry, Jimmy, we're going to have to let you go,"
right?
Sort of thing, wouldn't you? You know, you would. You just if even which is why I think producers are quite lame for kind of we didn't know. You know, these top producers at the BBC saying, "Well, you know, we heard things, but there was nothing we could actually do." Well, yes, you could just let him go. And,
one of the very sick things they said on the mainstream media this week was, we had to protect the talent, you know, regarding Jimmy Savile and Stuart Hall. We knew they were doing these things, but we had to keep them there because they were our, you know, that's what we're selling our brand on.
That's our cash cow.
These monsters, we were like, you know, protecting them because they were talented. I was like,
yes,
it's
crazy type of logic.
Yes, it
but it seems, you know, that once these lies achieve a certain sort of momentum, you know, it becomes like an unstoppable train, really. And I think, I guess what it is that there are two, the saying is that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So if we do have these people that are at the tops of the power structures, you know, in big business, large corporations, you know, like the BBC and, you know, probably any other you can think of, you know, it must be that they have a much higher percentage of these, you know, how can we call them? Well, evil people, basically, that have done, you know of these things, and either they may not be directly involved in them, but they may be of such a mindset as to say, oh, well, there's nothing particularly wrong with it, you know. They just allow it to happen in their immediate sphere. But then, obviously, they realise that the rest of us know that this is a horrible and brutal way to behave, to abuse anybody, you know, at all, and hold power over them like that and ruin their lives. We know that that's wrong, and they know that we know that that's wrong, and so they have to cover it up, you know, because if they were seen to, you know, obviously if they were seen to be supporting this, that would be their power base gone, you know. So that they have no choice but to cover it up to maintain their control over the rest of us.
And how many people have resigned over the BBC at the BBC over the BBC's complicity in all this? I've not heard of anybody that you know, high profile or otherwise, resigned over just the just murky pit that the BBC is been exposed as.
Yeah, you'd think that.
You know, it's interesting to particularly over the last week, watching BBC News report on themselves about the Jimmy, you know, the Janet Smith review, which from just skimming through it very briefly, I mean, it's like 500 pages long. I only caught the first maybe few. But that is a complete whitewash. And poor Tony Blackburn being used in an underhand way in to put him on the sort of front page whilst this is sort of being published. It's, you know, it's ridiculous. So they sack someone because they don't like the way that he answers questions, yet they don't sack someone who there's massive rumours that for years and years and years that he was abusing everybody that he met, really. Mm. You know, this wasn't just kids, this was fucking everybody. He was like, crazy. Yeah, the double standards, the double standards of the BBC is, they are the height of depravity.
Yeah.
And just talking about the sick rings that, you know, we've been talking about just recently here, you know, you can't help but perhaps, you know, they bring into mind the Madeleine McCann story and everything that Rich D. Hall is bringing up with that, because, you know, there certainly seems to be perhaps some kind of intergenerational ring situations going on there, something very odd, and the high profile people who just happen to be staying at this tiny little, you know, low key resort.
How did the biggest PR company in England, how are they there the day after? How was their head man there the day after, sifting through photographs to give to the police? Why not? Why is he the filter?
All right, yeah.
To the police?
This shows you that this network, you know, is very extensive and connected right into the middle of the main power structures, both, well, you know, across the board, really, the royal family, BBC, MI5, the political establishment, Fleet Street, the medical profession. It seems that there are enough of these people running these operations, you know, with these depraved individuals and abused individuals, you know, and I hope that having to go, you know, go through all, discussing all of this and everything and thinking about it, because I certainly don't like discussing these topics and thinking about them, but I hope that this is going to mean that in a few years' time it's all going to stop, you know, and we're going to have some type of separation of these people. I don't know, maybe we won't have enough prisons big enough to hold them, but I hope that something gives, and when it gives, that we end up in a better situation than we've got now, you know.
Amen to that.
Yeah, you
know,
absolutely.
Because it really brings you down thinking about these things, and you don't really, you know, I certainly really don't want to think about them.
Yes, it's difficult. I know everybody that I know who has done research on these kind of subjects have always said that, you know, it was the most difficult thing they've ever had to do, and that, you know, they just found themselves mentally in such a dark place while they were researching it that, you know, it's not everyone that can really, you know, even put their mind in that place to do the research.
I think also, you know, we have to be wary in this way, in our own minds, you know, that, I mean, just going back to 9/11, I don't, you know, everyone sort of, I think, reacted slightly differently at least. But I remember when 9/11 happened and I, you know, watched the events unfold, I became, you know, I was actually shivering for about 2 days. You know, I was shuddering continually for a period of about 2 days, because I think it was a mixture of seeing what had happened and I had a great sort of fear about what was going to happen next. You know, I didn't really know what was going to happen after that, and what the retaliation would be. And all I'm saying is that that was the trauma. That was the trauma-based mind control kicking in, and I was under it, you know, without really realizing what it was, because I'd never really experienced it not before. So in other words, what I'm saying is that much of the world's population was put into this mental state of experiencing trauma. You know, because I didn't know anyone that was involved in the events. You know, I didn't even live in America, you know, or anything. And to have somebody that was involved in it as well, and have that personal connection to it, as well as, you know, the fear of what would come next and everything like that. You know, I can't imagine what sort of state those people would have been in. But what I was trying to say is that this, the horrible things that we are talking about here, we and you, as you just said, you know, they can put you in a dark place, and we really have to have some kind of mental defense for that somehow. I mean, I think, you know, because us talking here, we've been looking into these horrible things, you know, like 9/11, 7/7, you know, and the situation in Palestine and all those horrible things. So we're perhaps a little bit more you know, we've got mental constitution to stand up to it. But nevertheless, we do need to make sure that we don't get sucked down so completely into it that we end up losing our faith in and you know, and hope that there will be a better life, you know, in future, sort of thing, you know.
Well, absolutely. Our mantra here is that people are generally good. You know, people, the day-to-day people that you meet, everybody in the world, are actually good, and the what we're talking about here is a small percentage of
mankind.
I think
that's it, isn't it? And you've got to remind yourself of that.
For every road rager, there's always someone
There's a cable driver. Yeah. There's one road rager for every 1,000,000,000 cable drivers, basically. Mm. And we are a bunch of
people. And the ethos of this radio station is building a Type 1 civilization that we want to see ourselves. So,
you know, a friendship agenda, sort of people, you know. Like you say, Andrew, there should be, I mean, we're seeing a hell of a lot. I mean, we were going to talk about this subject anyway before we asked you to get involved tonight. I mean, there was only, it was obviously the whitewash of the BBC and, you know, other sort of nasty things. I mean, there's even a footballer who's going through a trial at the moment, which kind of seems to be a kind of high profile. Deb's always said about it's getting people used to this kind of, you know, normalising the situation sort of thing. And obviously when the Sterling Allen thing, I heard about it, we immediately thought of talking about, you know, about that relationship. So, you know, it's just a saturation point, right? And you're right, there has to be some sort of conclusion to it, whereas the whole thing falls apart and we can, you know, take back control of, you know, let decent people run the show.
Yeah.
Because as far as I can tell, there isn't any decent people around at the minute. Even, I mean, Rich opened his talk the other night there with, because I think it just been announced that Boris is going to be standing against Cameron on this Brexit bullshit that's going on at the minute, sort of thing.
And, yeah.
You know, that was his opening gambit on, was why the fuck have we got these two same people?
You know, idiot number one.
Exactly. You know, and is it a case of that Cameron's set himself up to lose, Boris is going to be ushered in, sort of thing? You know, you read these plans clear.
One looks like a pig and one fucks a pig.
Yeah, it's sad and shocking.
Sad and shocking, but let's hope I'm all for your idea of let's conclude this.
And of course, one of the big ways to do that is by revealing and getting people to really understand the process that went on those buildings on 9/11.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
Because it's extremely. Do you know what? I don't want to say I love watching them, but I do find it fascinating, absolutely fascinating, when I watch those buildings come apart every time. The Alka-Seltzer.
Who was the Who was the chap we were listening to on the drive up there, Nick?
Oh yeah, the High Side Chat.
Oh,
See, things like
Greg Carl.
Things like Greg that are starting to happen. You know, people who went into Doctor Who before are starting to come to it now, and
a lot of people are beginning
we're starting to see a lot more inroads into it. So,
And also, like you said, I think at the start, he very rarely, or not, that was like the first one, he's never really done shows on 9/11. Mm. So it's good that the one that he does do, he's got Dr. Woods on.
Yeah, I was aware that she'd done that, and she discussed that a little bit with me. But I think, just going back to what you were saying there about raising awareness of this issue, because you know, I said it in 2008 on Ambrose Lane's program, that there is no issue that you know, what happened on 9/11 doesn't affect. It affects every issue, you know. That's the thing, and not just, you know, geopolitics, but you know, energy and anti-gravity, advanced technology, you know, hidden physics, all of that stuff, which
even
esoteric stuff, you know, call it black magic if you wanted some the quick phrase. Yeah, but there must be some aspects of that involved, and so bringing yourself to an understanding of these, you know, you wise up to the tricks that these people are playing on you, you know, conscious, subconscious, physical, non-physical, you know, health-wise, etc., etc. You know, I'm sure you cover all these topics in your other discussions. And also, what I wanted to say was, it's become clear to me that this knowledge of, you know, what happened to the World Trade Center, it is a central kind of thing in defeating this evil web of influence, because they seem to, whoever's running this web has put a lot of work, and some of it is hard to understand, or a lot of it's hard to understand, into keeping this covered up. You know, what I'm really saying is that the way that this cover-up works, it's extremely sophisticated, and it operates on all levels. And it, you know, for example, it seems to involve, I've actually said that to a few people, that it seems to, the cover-up actually works like a field effect. It's like there is a cover-up field, and anyone, you know, can be influenced by this cover-up field without actually realizing it, you know. And some of these people I mentioned before, for example, I'd say, some of them I can't say that they, you know, have been threatened, they have a reason, you know, that, in other words, like Jim Mars, for example, you know, he writes about all this stuff, he's written about aliens, he's written books and books and books about this, yet he will not get this right. He will not just put this in a book, you know, first chapter, Dr. Judy Wood's book, blah, 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 you know, second chapter, something else, and he won't do that. You know, I'm singling him out because he just, you know, he came into my mind thinking about, because that's what he writes about 9/11 as well. He has written about it. He wouldn't write that. So, what's the problem? You know, he's written about all this other stuff. You know, he's written about secret space programs and, you know, UFO stuff. Yeah, he wouldn't write about this, or at least if he did, it wouldn't be accurate. I can almost guarantee that.
Yeah, I was going to say it wouldn't be. Grounded
in
fact,
no,
Dr. Wood.
No,
okay.
And so,
well, isn't maybe the fact with all these people like Jim Mars that their living is on selling books? So if they're fearful that by mentioning Dr. Wood, their career is going to take a pitfall because they're being influenced by outside forces that are telling them, you do that, then you're not going to sell any books.
Well,
we're
going to
make sure that you're
selling
any books.
Well, I think that if they have business acumen,
yeah, exactly,
then they will understand that they should be referencing Dr. Wood, because in the future that is going to be the calling card for selling lots of books. If they have
I'd say two things in response to that, and I think you're right, Debbie, but also, you know, because I just have this experience where I put a listing up on Amazon for Where Did the Towers Go book, you know, because I hadn't, I just hadn't, I'd never put one up. I put a personal listing up there. I never got around to do it, and then I, to doing it. And I discovered that somebody I was sending a number of books to was actually reselling them on Amazon for twice what I was selling them for without my permission, you know, without telling me that's what they were doing.
That happens quite a lot.
Yeah, and I was a bit naive about this.
Freeman's put out Weird Stuff, Jamie, they've put out Freeman Weird Stuff 1 and 2. And someone was selling them on there for basically $1,000 when they're selling them for $25.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen one listed for $3,000 of Where Did the Towers Go on Amazon. It's just crazy. But I've sort of digressed a bit from the point. But so, in other words, and having put this listing up, all the books that I had left from this batch have now sold within, you know, several weeks. In other words, it sells, you know, it sells books. So I don't think that is necessarily an excuse that they're not putting this in because it's not going to sell books, you know, and I don't think that's particularly...
Do you know what the best people to talk to are people who have been, like, involved in 9/11 truth movement and AE 9/11 and have been going along with that, and then have found themselves doing a bit of research into Dr. Wood's work, and have then begun to understand Dr. Wood's work, and have then begun to realize how they've been duped. And those people are the most... you know, that it's just...
It's like an ex-smoker sort of
thing. Yeah, yeah, it's just brilliant, because they are the ones who then really see how a cover-up works, because they've seen it for themselves and experienced it. So as time goes on, there's going to be more and more people like that, and it's going to be harder and harder for them to use these kind of techniques, because
that's a sense that I'm getting. But I just think this process, there is this, like, almost like a field effect which is limiting that. Or as more people, you know, if you imagine that more people are going through that process that you just described, it's almost like they have a new batch of trolls that are launched periodically to try and quell, you know. So in other words, what happens is you get these people who used to be into the architects and engineers stuff, and then, for example, they'll go on to Dr. Wood's Amazon book review and they'll post comments supporting, you know, that the book is legitimate and everything, and very important. And then you get, you know, another three trolls coming on to try and drown out the sound of that, you know. So it almost seems like we have got this polarization which appears to be going on.
It does tend to,
and maybe that's a sign that yes, you know, we are now getting it more. You know, we're now actually understanding how we've been manipulated and how important this is to get to understand for yourself. You know, that's the thing. You have to understand it for yourself. No one, it's like, I don't know if you've seen I'm sure you've seen the Irrefutable film that Adam Dwyer's done. You know, he had I think that's had a real impact. You know. I think sort of an underground impact almost. It's like you know, I described it a while ago that there was this undercurrent which has been kind of there. You know, I've seen it when I get people writing to me, you know, saying, oh, you know, I never looked at Dr. Wood's research until recently, and I looked at it, and oh, you know, I just, you know, had my mind blown away, sort of thing. You know, I've had a few messages like that, not hundreds or you know, anything like that, but a few indicative of this undercurrent building. I think the Irrefutable film has helped that.
Yes, and I think that actually when people do, like you say, get their mind blown by the realization that comes when you understand Dr. Wood's work, it does tend to shut people up for a while, though. They do tend to go a bit quiet because they can't really assimilate. It takes a while to really understand how you've been duped. that well. Do you see what
yes.
I mean?
Yes, oh yeah.
So they tend, they have
and
to
it,
kind
and,
of take
and it also,
time to
it,
kind of ground themselves, you know, and yeah, really get to grips with
it. They get frustrated because they realise they've been duped again.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, also, so it makes you question,
it,
like...
Also, it also takes a little bit of time to understand, to some degree, exactly the ramifications of what Dr. Woods is showing you.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, from my point of view, the first time I listened to it, I think it was a Red Eyes interview, and I didn't quite understand what she was talking about. And then I think about a month later was when she came over and did a talk here, and then we had her on the show. And slowly, pennies drop. And still now, 4.5 years later, pennies are dropping. So it's a long process to really understand fully what is being presented.
It's hard to get on at her level because she is so fucking qualified.
And that's why the irrefutable. That's why the irrefutable films are so good, because it is. It's for the YouTube generation, really. It's for people that have, that it's showing you the bullet points. So you'll go on to then watch the 2 hour presentation that Dr. Woods has.
Yeah, and when you realise like what was happening on that day, and you see how those buildings were turning to dust, you think, well, how did I think that could possibly be a collapse now, when every time you watch it, you're like, my God, I am seeing that peeling away and frothing into dust as it's coming apart. And and then you look back to how you maybe looked at it the first time and go, oh, I just thought that it fell down. And then you go, well, that's amazing, because, yeah, now I can see it's frothing out like a water fountain and turning to dust. And it's just getting that, realisation that, yeah, this is, that I just wasn't seeing it like that before. And it's a real lesson in understanding observation, which is something that a lot of people don't seem to have.
I think, you know, that's it. I mean, when you study that closely and, you know, like you say, you watch it a few times, it is a revelation. And it's almost like, you know, these people that have seen, you know, it's probably might sound like a bad analogy, but I don't think it is. If you see something that no one else has seen, you know, like a flying saucer landing, you know, it lands right in front of you, you know, and we know probably a number of people that have experienced this. So you know that these things are really, they're real physical objects, you know, and they come from elsewhere, or their, you know, black programs. You know that it's real, and you can't. You might, if you don't have a good quality video camera, you know, with you when you see this, there's no way you can convey that to somebody else. But with this experience of seeing the destruction of the towers, you can convey it to somebody else, because we've got, you know, hundreds of videos of it, and it's written down in history as something that really happened, albeit, you know, with a different explanation. We can show and prove that explanation, which is put into all the official sources, mainstream sources, is wrong. So that's why this is so powerful, because it's an entry point. It's like a portal to a new understanding of you know, the world around us.
And it's really exciting, actually, because very rarely in our lives do we get the opportunity to see something one way. And then to see it the way it actually is. And what I'm saying there is that we've been taught to see something one way because that's the only understanding we have of it. When a building goes away, the only way we can understand that it would go away would be if it fell down. That's the only understanding that we logically have. But then to actually realise that actually that building didn't fall down, it went away in differently than we're used to understanding it. Now, that's quite unique in the history of humanity, to be able to have the opportunity to have one perspective and then see it from the true perspective. Now, the only way that we can understand that it really came apart is by understanding the observations that Dr. Wood has put together. Now, I kind of liken this to how when cowboys and Indians time, and the Indians had never seen a gun, and yet their people were being shot, and they didn't know what this thing was, but they knew it was killing people, and the only explanation they had for it was a thunder stick. And so, you know, thunder stick, this, and, you know, to say a thunder stick, that's very, you know, it sounds a bit crazy. But this is what we're saying. So what we're, what Dr. Wood is saying is that, you know, she's not saying this is a ray beam or something, which a lot of other people have you know, tried to put these words in her mouth. This is something that we don't know what the name of it is, and so we're looking to understand it in a way that we've never understood before. So it's absolutely amazing to have the opportunity to actually do this, because as many people have said, the 9/11 event was affected human consciousness, and I think this is the positive side of it, that we have this opportunity to understand something that we completely never understood before. And I'd like to thank Dr. Wood for giving us that opportunity, and I'd also like to welcome Dr. Wood, who's been listening and yes, has joined us this evening.
Yeah, well, thank you very
Hello.
Much. Hello. One of the difficulties with this is, you know, a rechanging of people's perspective, because they've been so trained to, you know, what's the answer? What's your opinion of the answer? We can argue about opinions about the answer. And instead of looking at the actual process, it's they've been so conditioned to, you know, if you don't know what the answer is, then you move on, or you just assume an answer.
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but it just came to me there that it's almost like in medical terms, whereby they see a problem and they only address the symptoms of it, so they'll give you a pill rather than, they're not addressing the symptoms, they're just addressing what the thing is, so they give you a pill for that particular thing rather than addressing what the symptoms are and looking at all and making a bigger picture of something to address what the problem is. And it seems to be this is the case with the 9/11 event, that people just want to go, oh, well, this is the pill for this, and there's the answer, rather than addressing all the issues.
That's actually an excellent analogy, because I hadn't seen it so clearly before, is that if there's a new illness somebody hasn't seen before, the typical doctor instead stuffs it into a different diagnosis, a wrong diagnosis, because he hasn't seen this one. He doesn't know how to problem solve. Because he knows how to treat this, and this illness with these pills, so it's got to be one of those. So let's start throwing pills at it. And very much like, you know, over history with medicine, they had this wastebasket they would throw things, unknown things into, calling it, you know, psychosomatic or psychological. And, you know, there's various people who've died, you know, imagining they're throwing up blood, and they bled to death.
Yeah.
Because the doctors didn't know what it was, and so it was just imaginary. And it seems like a lot of that type of thing, if the doctors are so focused on only what they know, it's got to be one of these, and they want to plug into an answer, they don't see what it really is.
Mm. It's very similar to that, yeah, how, you know, this has been... 9/11 has been diagnosed a certain way, and we all know that it's a misdiagnosis, you know, and you have the same sort of experience as when you go to the doctor and, you know, the doctor describes that you've got a certain, you know, disease or problem, but you know it's not that, you know, you might not know what it is, but you know it's not that. And so, you know, you've got this huge battle on to convince the doctor that it's something else. you know.
And you have to look at all the symptoms. I mean, years ago, the doctor would look at you, get you to stick your tongue out, look at your tongue, take your pulse, ask you about, you know, various things. These days, they just go in, ask you what's wrong. You say, oh, I feel nauseous and I can't go to the toilet. And they go, right, take some of these. You know, they won't
get
the whole picture.
Yeah. Do you think that...
It's a bit like how I feel when I hear Stephen E. Jones, nauseous and can't go to the toilet.
Do you think that a way that they're reframing people to see a building, in inverted commas, collapse in popular culture is putting into films buildings appearing to justify, but saying that they're collapsing?
I haven't seen that, but I wouldn't doubt it that happens. But we even have the event of that bridge in Minneapolis in 2007 that they claimed collapsed due to bird poop.
Oh,
rusted through it. But
that was a lot of bird poop.
For some reason, you know, because they're doing road work, only half the bridge was open. So the week before, you had twice the load on the bridge. And it caused every support to fail at the exact same moment. So the bridge went horizontally down. The cars didn't fall off. You know, they went down with the bridge. And the people got their cars who rode the bridge down. It went down horizontally. So, but people are told an answer and they move on.
Yeah.
They don't say, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, bird poop corrode through metal.
That, at the exact same moment.
At the exact same moment, yeah, on every... That's just like, you know, the idea that every single beam within the Twin Towers was miraculously,
damaged by a plane.
damaged by some kind of form of whatever they want to choose to say that it was damaged by, that they all went miraculously at the same time, every single one. You know?
Well, you don't even need to know that. You just need to know you saw an airplane on the TV set and the buildings, quote, collapsed, and therefore the buildings must have caused the collapse.
Yes.
That's all that the people know, but, you know, it's they need it wrapped up in a nice, neat package. What's the answer?
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's that becomes difficult. So when I give a presentation, I'm trying to teach people to observe the evidence. It isn't about the answer, but they don't get that. So it might seem quite confusing because, you know, what's the answer? Why didn't she tell us the answer? Why did she get to the answer? We need the answer. You know, why is she wasting her time on this other stuff?
But that is the best thing about your work and the way you do the presentations, because there is just all this is the array of evidence to see with it, because it wasn't just a building that went away. There was so much more that happened on that day, and the way it went away, the effects that were left afterwards. It's not just I see the AE-911 stuff, it's like they've kind of just brushed up a few little pieces into a dust bin and gone, a dustpan, and kind of gone, oh, well, this is this, and that's all there is. They, you know, and there's just so much more of a mess to sort out than just a few little pieces. And your book very effectively does that.
But we don't know what it is because we're going to call for a new investigation. So don't bother figure it out yourself. Just get on board with us and call for a new investigation. Rah, rah, rah.
I know all this new investigation stuff. I don't
look at the investigations that there's already, you know, clarified.
It's already, that someone qualified to do it has already done, and that, you know, begs questions which have never been refuted, you know. So,
Dr. Wood, I must say, I must congratulate you on a really good interview on the High Side Chat there. Brilliant. I think you definitely opened Greg's eyes and it was also good that, you know, he had the book there in front of him. He'd actually read it.
Did he read it before I would be on? I insisted on it.
Yeah.
I teased him saying I was going to give him a pop quiz.
He did a really good job. I thought that was a really good, clear, interesting interview.
The one thing that went weird was this mind virus that, I think, as Andrew refers to. You know, I mentioned who my childhood hero was.
Mm-hmm. And again, that was so funny because I'm reading a book about Copernicus at the moment.
and my whole statement on the show was, he took a licking and kept on ticking. And also, he knew what he knew that he knew, and so he could dig his heels in. That was, you know, the essence of it. But so many people latched onto that, and they immediately started throwing all sorts of, you know, stones and rocks and carrying on, saying, oh, she's promoting that the Earth is round and not flat, and that she totally agrees with everything that Copernicus has ever said. And, like, where'd that come from?
Yeah.
And actually, what they're doing is the opposite of what Copernicus was all about, which was he knew what he knew. It didn't matter if he was unpopular in it.
I think,
And it didn't give in to peer pressure. He just knew, he was sure what he knew.
I think that interview's, or the I think it's the edited version of that interview is on YouTube, isn't it? Because I think you sent me the links, didn't you?
The first half.
Is it? Yeah, because the whole thing's what? Is the whole thing 2 hours or 3 hours or?
Yeah,
2 hours.
So
because I think all those nasty comments are on the YouTube thing, aren't they? Or yeah.
Yeah, there was also the second half, you have to get the membership, and he gave me a membership to get the second half, and I saw the comments on the membership thing, and there's just as many. It's the same kind of thing, complaining about Copernicus, and they actually state. And she first right off said, when she said that she totally agreed with everything Copernicus said, it lost me at that point.
Yeah.
That was her statement. Well, I don't think I said anything Copernicus said. It was about, you know, he took a look and he kept on ticking and knew what he knew that he knew. And I think I read the quote that he made, which is very similar to my know what it is that you know that you know that you know, and know everything else you don't know.
I think one of the key things there really is you know, going back to what you were saying about Where Did the Towers Go book, is that it deprograms you, because it, you know, accentuates and teaches you the value of observation, and that's one of the key factors, and I think Wally agrees with me on that one.
yeah.
So you know, it's that's why, and you and I have discussed this, it is so dangerous to the establishment, because it's empowering your brain as well as your, you know, giving you this vital knowledge about what happened on 9/11. You know, the two go hand in hand as you walk through the crime scene, this horrible crime scene. But as part and parcel of that, if you do it with honesty and integrity as you go through it, you will come out at the other end a different person if you didn't know about this before you started reading it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you hear a lot of people these days talking about, you know, they're doing these ayahuasca experiences to gain, you know, enlightenment or, you know, some kind of higher knowledge or opening, you know, something in themselves. Basically, they should just read Where Did the Towers Go? And when they understand that, it's going to have the same effect.
Many people have said that. Yeah, there's a course in critical thinking, and it forces you also to slow down and look, and it gets out of people that need to jump to the answer.
Yeah.
The book doesn't have every answer in the universe, but by the time you get to the end, you realize you don't need that.
Yeah.
You know what it is that you know that you know that you know, and that's enough. That's plenty.
Right.
But it also empowers the reader to be able to identify other things around them and see what's going on.
Mm. And you don't have to go to the Amazon jungle to have the experience.
You've always had power, Dorothy.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
It's in your hands.
it is. And it's phenomenal.
And I really respect the fact that you haven't put this on as an e-book because of the fact that you can read a bit of a book, stop, and actually take that information in, and then reflect on that, rather than just looking at a screen.
Yeah, and I don't know if you heard me talk about that before. There was a brilliant article that was in The Atlantic. It was, I think, from 2008, called "Is Google Making Us Stupid?" And it refers to people reading e-books and Googling online and whatever else they do, and no longer looking at printed books. And they find they can no longer do deep thinking and contemplate information. It's just about collecting information, memorize, regurgitate, kind of shallow thinking. And there was a quote, let's see if I can get it right. It's something like, I used to be a scuba diver in the sea of words, and now I'm a guy in a jet ski skimming along the surface.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that's what it's all about. People want my book in e-form so they can do word searches and do quote mining. And you don't understand the material that way.
I think also, you know, it's a sort of silly thing, really, but I do value having e-books, but the way that I use them is, you know, I tend to listen to them on my Android phone while I'm driving. And, of course, you know, doing that with Where Did the Towers Go would be pointless, you know, because it's highly visual, and anyway, you wouldn't fit it on a tiny screen, you know, and so forth. So, practically speaking, it's it would work as an e-book, really, anyway, so, you know.
I've got a little question that's a bit of a side to the conversation thus far, but after the Rebecca Roth sort of fiasco, Dr. Wood, have your book sales picked up any since that's been ended?
I can't pinpoint to that, no. Her book sales aren't totally dead either. It's surprising.
Oh, really?
There's still people who will post. There's much fewer comments, but or whatever you call it, reviews. But they still say, you know, a lot of them say, wow, this is, you got to read this. It's the most informative book I've seen. And I really wonder if she orders the books and then posts that.
I think a team. Barnes and Noble.
Yeah, I think, you know, again, we've got to consider that that is a well managed operation, and you know, they would have the resources to stack the deck in their favour. You know, they could easily buy 500 copies or whatever, you know, a stroke from Amazon with the resources that they have, if they chose to do that,
or have a lot of fake accounts. To be able to post.
And I mean, you know, the sorts of cyber technology that they've got, they could even automate this, you know, and they've got as much money as they need. So if they wanted to set up 500 fake Amazon accounts, you know, and buy these books.
You have a room full of people at the Pentagon or whatever, just ready to log on.
And, you know, away they go. And, you know, I think we can't pay it too much mind, you know.
Yeah, I guess it's suspect when somebody rates a book with a 5-star review and then just says, great book.
Yeah.
And there's a whole, you get a whole bunch of them, and they usually are like one day it's posting day and there's like 10 of them, and then you don't get any for a couple of weeks, then you know, you get another cluster of them.
And this person doesn't do one single personal appearance at a bookshop or a signing or a talk anywhere where they sign copies of their book.
Or where somebody might ask them a question.
Or see them feel that they're completely fake with a wig.
But the fact that people fell for it, like people who read my book apparently had a relapse. There's a couple that wrote to me. I was just shocked. You got to contact her. She knows everything. Why? Because she said she does? Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
very odd. Yeah.
She's got air stewardess ears.
I really don't think she was a stewardess. She said it contradicts the knowledge.
Yeah.
It was just a little bit that was in the, is it the conspiracy theorista? She did a, I think you Centre
oh, yes,
Andrew.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, formerly known as, formerly, of, the artist or the YouTuber formerly known as Betsy McGee.
Oh, yeah.
That's the one.
Yeah, that was very good.
I have an idea about that whole Rebecca Roth thing, though, because I think that that I have an idea that it was set up
mm-hmm. to... so Fetzer could expose her and yes, he could be a hero.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. It was set up to be brought down by Fetzer, and so he looks like he's got his finger on the button. And yeah.
But other people had exposed her already, and it was Joey Moore, that flight attendant, was on a radio show with me.
I heard.
You know, exposing yes. her. And you know, I guess the walls were closed, and Fetzer had his right timing.
Yeah, yeah, that was months before as well, wasn't it?
Yes.
I mean, that was about 6 months before, you know, the thing where Fetzer kind of comes through and says, oh, yeah, you know, he's suddenly, you know, got his finger on the button and realized.
What also became clear from that is what Joey Ward said. He talked about his friends who were on Flight 175 who were killed, and then the next Rebecca Roth interview, she's talking about her friends who were on 175 that were killed. She would just pick up the, you know, the language. Mm.
Just remind us, Dr. Wood, about the, you spoke to me once about how on the flight, what they changed it so that if a flight was hijacked or if it stopped transponding at any particular moment, it would just automatically. Have a thing where it automatically just lands at the near. It goes onto autopilot and automatically lands itself.
Yeah, here's my age is going to show. In the 70s, you know, I remember they had like a hijacking a week going to Cuba.
Yeah.
And I thought, wait a minute, that can't be. And I went and looked it up. In the year 1974, there's something like 51 hijackings out of the 52-week year. And they're going, you know, hijacking, going to Cuba. It was so commonplace that there was a guy who wanted to go to Minneapolis, but all the flights were booked. So he got a flight going to California, and then hijacked it halfway through and had it go to Minneapolis. The hijacking was that common. So, but then they suddenly stopped right about the end of the 70s, around 1980. As it happens, there was new equipment that was retrofit onto the older planes. But when the Boeing 757 and 767 rolled off the assembly line in like 1982 and 83, they were the first planes that came standard equipment right off the assembly line, this anti-hijacking. That, you know, flying along, this is for domestic flights, so they're flying along, and somebody breaks in the cockpit with a gun or whatever, and so one of the co-pilot reaches over and punches in the code, and pilots can no longer fly the plane. It's out of their control. The nearest tower is then flying the plane. And maybe the co-pilot gets on the intercom and says, well, there's a bit of a mechanical problem. No big issue. Don't worry. Nothing to worry about. We'll be landing shortly. And they land. And a paddy wagon pulls up and pulls the thug off the plane. They arrest him, you know, cart him away. And then the plane takes off again. It doesn't take much before the thugs know that you can't hijack those planes.
They're not going to go where you want them to go. They're just going to end up landing at the nearest.
Right, and then you're surrounded. Yeah, and you get taken off the plane. So it just doesn't work. But what it does is locks out any pilot control. It's sort of like putting on autopilot and land.
Yeah.
You know, those are in the program, part of the flight management system of Boeing 757, 767. They came standard equipment off of the assembly line. And of those planes, I'm just going to talk about domestic flights. There have been none in history in the U.S., domestic flights that have ever been hijacked, of Boeing 757 or 767. There was only one 767 that was hijacked. It was Ethiopian Airlines. You know, that was not U.S., and often the foreign buyers wouldn't want the electronics in their cockpit because they wouldn't want the U.S. controlling their planes. But for domestic flights, never has there been a hijacking. And isn't that peculiar for planes that have been around that long? Mm-hmm.
That just on that day, it
four
was.
Out of four?
Yeah.
And no hijackings within the U.S., you know, domestic hijackings, for 10 years, at least 10 years prior to 9/11, of any kind of plane.
Yeah, it makes you wonder
what, you know, what changed that all of a sudden they could stop hijackings. It has to be some kind of technology that went into place. Mm. So, yeah, I talked about that during that show, too. And, of course, that you know, people got upset about that. But some other stuff she said that was just totally bogus.
Mm. Yeah.
That some, you know, like saying that this whoever's spraying pepper spray at the back of the plane, that Betty Ong, whatever, on the intercom, yeah. That she would have been choking, like, because it was the plane's pressurized.
Yeah.
Well, if that's the case, then somebody spraying pepper spray on the street in New York City is going to get somebody in China choking, because it's more pressurized at sea level than it is on the planes. The pressure drops as the plane goes up to about 10,000 feet, and then they hold that pressure in the cabin constant from there on, you know, in higher levels. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's less pressure. It's the equivalent of 10,000 feet, you know, pressure. Mm-hmm. And so it's more pressurized at the airport, at grounds. It has nothing to do with pressure. It has to do with air circulation. And if you've ever walked up and down the aisle and you smell some wicked perfume, the row later, you know, right after that, you don't smell it. Because there's enough air circulation in air cleaning. Or if you fart at your seat and then you head up the aisle and you come back, you don't smell until you get back to your row. it isn't elsewhere in the plane. You know, otherwise, you know, if you get people with wicked perfume on there, otherwise you'd asphyxiate the whole plane.
Is that why they never serve baked beans on the plane then?
Well, it might be maybe they don't serve them at the airport before people fly. Yeah. But the, you know, certain statements like that she made is just so dumb. It's like, has she ever been on an airplane?
Yeah.
As well as, you know, saying that if you turned off the transponder, it makes the plane invisible to radar. That's not somebody who's flown for 30 years. Actually, how I first learned of Rebecca Roth was from Joey Moore, the flight attendant who flew on 9/11. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to that show, it was I found it really shocking, you know, what his experience was that day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was. I mean, he says that they didn't tell them.
Why they had to get the cabin ready to land, but they weren't to tell the passengers they're going to land.
Yeah.
What show is this? So I can find it and put it in the show notes.
It was with Deanna Spingola.
Okay.
It's, in a way, I sort of wish, you know, hope, I'm glad we didn't say more, because then Rebecca Roth picks that up and generates that as her own.
Yeah, that was the other thing, wasn't it? You were telling me that she'd you'd made some comments about War of the Worlds, you know, being this sort of psyop that was played in 1938 on unsuspecting people, and you know, you'd made some comments about that. And
I said that, you know, right on day one, I thought it was a War of the Worlds type thing for, you know, on TV instead of on radio. You know, it was a radio drama whenever, you know, whenever it originally aired. And so I thought this was like a TV type of thing. And before that, I said that on air, Rebecca Roth had said that she didn't know anything. She fell for the hoax like everybody else. But after she heard that, she said, oh, yeah, I knew it was a War of the Worlds spoof. And, you know, she apparently didn't understand what War of the Worlds was. It wasn't a spoof.
It was a
radio drama.
I think another element of the Grapes of Wrath was that she was there to, you know, mix up things in people's minds of things
exactly.
that you've said and that she said. I mean, there she was, this woman with dark hair and glasses. The only other woman in the whole of the truth movement with dark hair and glasses is yourself.
Yep.
You know, so she was specifically put there to kind of, you know, so that people, you know, for the first time maybe trying to look up information of kind of finding this woman with dark hair and glasses talking about a book she's written about 9/11 and talking about some of the things that you've spoken about.
And then, of course, we've got all the superheroes, haven't we? You know, we've got Peter Parker, who was Spider-Man. We've got Clark Kent, Superman. We've got Bruce Banner, who was the Hulk. And then we've got Rebecca Roth, the hero of the Truth Movement.
Yeah.
She looks like, what was it? What was the name in Superman?
Oh, yeah, she does. Yeah, yeah.
She looks like
somebody. Yeah, it was a good cut-out picture that somebody sent me of that, yeah. It was very funny that she did look like Belma, except with a different coloured top. And I bet she's saying to herself, and I bet we would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for you meddling kids as well.
Yeah. If it wasn't for them.
That's right.
But she supposedly is off writing another book now.
Amazing.
But so many people would say, okay, so she's a fraud in this regard, but still we can't throw away all the good stuff she said because it's useful information. Well, who said it's useful information? It's stuff that's been around for... But she hasn't brought out anything new whatsoever.
No.
If somebody wanted to, they could document each of the things she said and who first said it. Including the James Corbett thing. She just got the words off of his little, what is it, a 5-minute video that he does about 9/11.
He called that, didn't he?
Yeah, and she took... the transcript of that, and she wrote it down, and then include that in her book as her own
That's
words.
Right, yeah. It's amazing, the brazen.
Terrible.
Yeah, and he's another one, isn't he?
Yeah. Going to be necking stuff off. It doesn't want to be him, does it?
Yeah. I saw him trying to kind of put down your work, and he basically all he could say was, "Oh, she used a picture of something." And what she said about it, I didn't really agree with. And that was the best he could come up with.
That was his argument.
Yeah, that was his argument. It was something about the fire engine that's at the side of Building 7, I think.
One I heard, he'd said that she doesn't even understand basic physics.
That,
because
actually, yes.
He says that about everybody, though. He's a
What the hell does he?
Well, he was just mimicking what from a debunking site that has some misinformation on it.
Yeah, was that a site from Alien Scientist by any chance?
Oh, probably. But they were trying to claim, oh, she has no difference between elastic and inelastic collisions. And with regard to billiard balls, well, I'm not talking about billiard balls on a table. I'm talking about using them as a timing device.
Yeah.
They don't collide. They just drop. And then, billiard balls are often seen as put on your thinking cap.
Yeah.
and it also keeps people thinking. You don't want them thinking about the towers because then the brain doesn't work. But it gives them something to focus on. They're all... the same except for the cue ball, and except for the color, so you can have a red one, a blue one, and whatnot, and follow them as a timing device. There was no collisions involved.
Yeah.
So it's irrelevant what they were saying, but he was, reading that off, and that Greg Jenkins said I was an idiot, so therefore I am. And he also used the bogus video they did of Hutchison. They took out the audio, and then they claimed that Hutch was showing something different.
It makes me laugh when I see like the videos that what's his name with the funny name who does all the video trickery stuff, Ace Baker did, of he's supposed to have reproduced all this supposed fake stuff that Hutchison does, but all he does is reproduce things levitating. And He does it, he shows how he's able to kind of do this with video trickery. Well, okay, he was able to make a video that looked like things were levitating by using trickery, and he showed you how to do it. Okay, very clever.
How does he levitate water?
Yeah, exactly. One, how does he levitate water?
Can he reproduce this?
Ace Baker didn't reproduce that. How does Hutchison... make material, different materials meld together like wood and metal? Didn't see Ace Baker producing that. And three, I don't think that Major or Colonel John Alexander went to Ace Baker and asked him to go to Los Alamos and do a few experiments, you know, show him a bit of camera trickery.
Whereas, well, didn't find, yeah, Ace Baker's lab worth looking at.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it's like he did one little trickery thing and everyone's supposed to go, wow, that's debunking for you. No, he just made a video. That's all he did. And it was, you know, doesn't detract from anything that Hutchison has come up with in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
But why would somebody want to do that?
That's the big question.
Going back to the weirdness factor, and I mean, we talked earlier on about the extreme, not only weirdness, but, you know, disturbing weirdness of Sterling Allen. There was a similar episode with Ace Baker later on, and he pretended to commit suicide when he was doing a broadcast with Fetzer, you know. And and then Fetzer called the cops, and you know, when they went round, and he was all right. He just, you know, tried to fake his own suicide. I mean, who does that, for heaven's sake? You know,
people who talk to Fetzer.
Live, yeah, on air. Is that live on air?
Yeah, and then Fetzer replayed.
He did,
the next day.
Yeah.
People are dying for my work.
I mean, it's just, this is just the crazy stuff they seem to get up to when they get cornered. You know, it's really quite disturbing, you know.
Okay, how much we can get into the latest big
one. We talked a little bit earlier before you came on about Sterling Allen. We were talking quite in some length.
I meant Donald Trump.
You can talk about that if you want. I haven't talked about that tonight, so yeah.
Trump is advertising that he's going to have a new investigation if he gets elected. Oh. And then I was wondering about it. It seems like he's got the same truth or talking points that were floating around about 10 years ago. Mm. Not the current ones, but 10-year-old ones, you know. Like, I forget what all the different ones were, steel-toed boots, you know, melting and got burning feet. Stand down orders, put options. I forget, the flavor of it was like he went into a time warp. And he was talking about, Bush went to war with Iraq knowing there was no weapons of mass destruction, war for oil kind of thing. And that got him kind of in deep doo-doo with other candidates and various supporters. But I wondered, like, where is that coming from? Someone had emailed me telling me to get my book to Trump because Gage got his DVD and booklet to Trump, and I'm not playing that game. Anyway, I was wondering what that was about. But Andrew, I don't know if you want to talk about
the latest. Yeah, there's a chap called Michael Rapson had contacted me, and
hello.
Sorry, yeah, I just had myself muted. Yeah, there was a chap called Michael Rapson contacted me yesterday or the day before, and he'd noticed that somebody called David Sadler had been posting posted a review on Amazon of Where Did the Towers Go, and it was a one-star, you know, horrible, scathing, nasty review. And Michael had come to the conclusion that this David Sadler was the same person who was Donald Trump's campaign manager. And our old buddy, this is obviously not being truthful in that statement, Mr. Fetzer, had complimented Mr. Sadler on his review, his nasty review. So this again, you know, links together these people, and Michael had suggested to me that, you know, Donald Trump was part of the cover-up, the 9/11 cover-up, and, of course, when you see a chain of things like that together, you think, yeah, you know, this again illustrates what I said how earlier, that this cover-up extends, you know, right into the presidential candidate election. Scheme of things, you know, and Donald Trump, you know, claims to be a businessman, doesn't he? He's independently minded in all of this. Although he's obviously, correct me if I'm wrong, but he's a Republican candidate, isn't he? So, you know,
Or he's on that ticket because that's how he can get the most visibility,
right.
I guess.
So you know, this shows you the length that they're going. They're trying to put this in people's minds, but with this sort of nonsense, you know, mixed in with it.
And Trump is very, what do you call it, by sane people is looked at as, you know, is a loose cannon out of control.
Right, and, you know, and then also about a couple of months ago, he had made these comments about banning Muslims. Well, what's that about? If he is sceptical of the story of 9/11 and he doesn't think Muslims were involved, and he hasn't said that, then he's now, you know, creating another set of controversy. He's just been a deliberate noisemaker.
Yep.
That's the only function he serves.
Well, yeah, he does the noise, and then he gets on network TV the
right.
next morning. It's like clockwork. Yeah. But it is kind of creepy that to really turn people. It was kind of like that Matthew Mills who stuck his face in front of the camera at the Super Bowl. At the MVP, you know, interview, and he, you know, he sticks his face in the, he gets in there illegitimately and sticks his face in the camera and says, "9/11 was an inside job," or whatever he says. and he's supposed to be applauded for that, huh? And he's also, you know, been sticking his camera in the face of the sister, the surviving sister of somebody who was killed at Sandy Hook. This picture of the family, this is a Photoshop. Admit it, with, you know, put his camera in her face.
Yeah.
I've seen that, yeah.
I mean, that's unnecessary, and...
And that gets connected with 9/11, of course.
Yeah. And that kind of...
Well, it just shows the machine's rolling on, doesn't it?
Well, you know, we've spoken about this before, Dr. Wood, haven't we? And I think Andrew as well, about the way the cover-up... official alternative story to 9/11 is going. I mean, obviously it was deliberately set up, but it's set up on two levels. One, to detract from people understanding what really happened to the towers, i.e. what Dr. Wood very clearly shows. But two, it's also there to get the people shouting down their own country, because it feels like in some way they are going to need to put themselves on trial to really bring themselves down. And we've spoken about this before, I know.
I was saying, I guess it was on Coast to Coast several years ago, that if you want to take over the U.S., you don't go in the front door because the military would come get you. So instead, you have five buddies and you poof the towers, you get a truther movement going, and you get everybody to hate their country, hate them so much from within, they want any government but the one they have. You walk in the front door and they welcome you with open arms. And that seems to be coming true more and more.
And also, you can, you know, going back to what we were saying earlier on about this, the horrible things going on with the paedophilia network, you know, you have to wonder if that's not some kind of equivalent to what, Dr. Wolf was just saying about the US, in that, you know, we've had all this horrible stuff coming out about Cameron and how, you know, he's kind of, you know, he is now seen as a horrible leader, and you know, by all appearances and the actions that he seems to have done, you know, with the withdrawal of support for disabled people and the cuts in public services, etc., and the all those things like the bedroom tax, all those unpopular measures, you know, you have to wonder if the same sort of thing is not going on here, that they're trying to get everyone to hate the government so that they can replace it with something else, you know.
I think, yeah, that's exactly right. And I think all the evidence...
It's not hard to hate the Tories, though.
Not at all.
And instead of a lame duck, he's a lame pig.
it's very similar to what happened at the end of Thatcher's reign and the end of Blair's reign as well. In that, here were people who had gone their full term and then in the very last turn they come up with the dirtiest
destroyer
of the whole of their whole reign, and it doesn't matter how dirty and horrible the things are that they do within that last reign, it's only going to last a short time compared to the 8 years that they've had previously. And then what happens is that they have a period of laying quiet. They go over to America or somewhere, some foreign country, and make loads of money by working for a cigarette company or something, like Thatcher did, who was Blair working for? He was doing speeches and all kinds, wasn't he, for thousands and thousands of pounds. They lay low for a while, and then comes the phoenix from the flames. They come back with renewed respect, and everyone goes, only remembers the... not what I would call the good things about them, but they suddenly getting praised for being such wonderful, strong, prime ministers.
We're told how good they are.
Yeah, we're told, yeah.
And we're expected to believe what they tell us, which is
and forget,
a big part of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing I don't understand, and talking about that, this B.O., that's what I call the guy in the White House right now, Barack Obama, but B.O., B.O. has, in the past couple of years, has been, willfully and blatantly violating the Constitution. And then you talk about the last couple of years, these guys, the other ones, like Congress, says, well, it'll only be two more years we have to put up with this. In other words, they don't see anything about impeachment. No. They sit by and allow it to happen. Like, what's with that?
Well, they tried that 15 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, with Clinton, yeah.
That was just a distraction. It wasn't...
Absolutely, yes. That's what we're saying, yeah.
But, somebody who, The president's job is not to make laws that violate the Constitution, but yet he does, and everyone thinks it's fine, huh? Not everyone, but the majority. Mm. And it's become a spectator sport, too. This country, it's our country.
Yeah.
Why are people just sitting watching?
That's an amazingly valid point. Why are you just sitting back letting this happen? This is
that's a dictatorship,
about.
Isn't it?
We're talking about this earlier, that, we the people should be saying no to these, we were talking about some of the monsters that are, the pedophilia sort of stuff within the establishment over here. Why are we letting that happen when we clearly, there was people who were known what was going on at the BBC, for instance, and they did nothing about it. So we, the people, should take back. It's, they're working for us. They're not, and they're just abusing the power, so we need to
I think a lot of people don't really know what to do. I mean, particularly with it being the people that should be in the front line of doing something, are the other MPs, say, in Britain, the other MPs that should be doing something, because they're actually within the power structure itself, so they should be trying to get things going more. But then, I think that other people don't know exactly how to stop it, and the police don't appear to be investigating these things. And I think it's similar in the U.S., I think Congress don't seem to be doing things, as you said. They're just saying, all we've got to do is put up with it for 2 years. Well, that's doing nothing, isn't it,
Yeah, but the reason why in 2004 I decided I had to stick my neck out, sacrifice my career for get involved in this 9/11 business, because somebody needed to do it. It was clear that the grown-ups weren't going to be taking care of things, those whose task it was to do these things. And I came to the realization, this is our planet, our country, it's our job to deal with it, rather than sit back and wait for somebody else to deal with it. And earlier, Andrew, you're talking about Jim Mars. These folks who know about my work, but they won't sacrifice their career.
Oh, right, yeah. And, his career is different to yours in that he doesn't really have a boss. and I don't think that writing accurately about your research would be the end of his career. You know, I mean, I know what you mean, but that's the sort of sad thing about it, that
he would be attacked by the truth. Look what happened to Jesse Ventura.
True. Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, I suppose that is true.
He was talking about running for the presidential race.
Yes,
when he first started talking about my work, man. It's Alex Jones jumped all over him, then all the truthers jumped over him, threw him over the cliff.
True enough, yeah. Yeah.
And even after he started trying to kiss up to Gage and say, well, maybe Gage is right, too, and it didn't save it. It just muddled it up.
Mm. Yes, there's a lot of impotence in politics for people who are trying to make a change. But I think that Dr. Wood, you're an inspiration, not only for the general public, as we talked about earlier, that your work is, you know, as we've said, forget doing things like ayahuasca. If you want to have a mind-blowing experience that's going to enlighten you as to the ways of the world, then you just need to buy a copy of Where Did the Towers Go and spend some quality time understanding what that book is all about.
Just read it front to back and just, you know, look along. Don't think about the end point. Just, you know, like, why is this way? And you stop and you think about, why is that way?
Mm. And also for yourself, Dr. Wood, you put yourself in the position of leaving, you know, a good job, a good career, for what you felt was, you know, you had to do this. No one else wanted to do it.
A just cause.
Yeah, an extremely just cause. And I hope that if there's anyone listening who is feeling in a similar position where they're not quite sure, you know, they have information or they have something that they you know, is actually going to terminate the career that they're in at the moment, but it's going to take them in another direction. I hope that your work will encourage them to do that, because people's minds.
What you brought up was so significant, because there are people who know things, but they want to keep their jobs, they keep their head down.
Yeah.
You know, like, for example, Jim Mars and, you know, various other people, they keep their heads down instead of doing something about it. And that's the people who, in other words, know this information, suppress it for their own personal gain.
Mm. Yeah.
You, Dr. Wood, you know, you're a woman, let's face it, and, you know, there's an awful lot of guys out there, but, you know, you've shown that you've got the gall of, you know, more than any of the guys that are out there. And
I've heard people I've seen people post things similar to that, but with other terms.
It wouldn't involve comments about spherical objects at all, would it?
Having more spherical objects than...
having a greater count of spherical objects than people of a different gender.
Right.
Yes.
We mentioned earlier that the three of us, B, Steve, and Fi, went this week to see Richard D. Hall talk, and we'd been listening to the high size chat conversation that you had in the car on the way there. And then when we got there, before he was talking, Irrefutable was playing to it was quite synchronistic.
After watching that Irrefutable, it's hard to step around it. It's hard. How do you debunk it? You know. And online, there are people who do. Well, there's a guy who posted, you know, I don't see any evidence why Judy Woods' space beams are, you know, have any validity. And fortunately, the next person who posted said, would you like to talk about this video right here? Why do you want to talk about something else?
Yeah.
Diverting attention away from it is the only thing they can do.
Yeah. But, serious people are, realizing that these are the tactics that they use, and this is the language that they use, the space beam language. People are wise to that because it's been highlighted many times now.
But the people who are just starting to look, don't get it for a while, or say, well, maybe she was promoting space beams before, and now she's wise up, so she's wishy-washy, or they have a lot of caution involved, and it takes them a while to sort through that.
Yeah. Well, the followers will always follow, and once your work becomes the more dominant, they'll just follow that. So they'll always be followers. But the people who count, the people who are really trying to understand something, they're the ones who are really, the strong voices in the forums and that.
The difficulty, with the typical person is that they're not conditioned to look what's in front of them. They're conditioned. Well, what do other people have to say about it?
You did make the distinction on that interview by saying instructed energy instead of directed.
Yeah.
I think when people think of just the term directed energy, they're thinking of a beam, whereas instructed energy, you're saying that this is being instructed to do this, and it's not being it's not a directional thing.
But the technology is developed in departments, probably in other countries also, but the Directed Energy Directorate, under their direction. this kind of thing follows. But just, I guess it's that knee-jerk, a word that sounds like, so therefore, and they jump on board with lots of stuff. But maybe I should say that more often and spell that out. That it's, as I say, it's directed to do something differently than it normally does, but they need the word instructed.
But people mostly hear the first thing and then latch onto that. So once they've heard the term directed, then they've got a...
Because they're looking for the picture. Answers.
Exactly. So they've got a picture in the mind of what this thing looks like, and because you're saying directed,
that's a good point. I should start with the word instructed before directed. Or the energy is directed to do something differently. It normally does. And I could say that, but that's a point, because they're so geared to listening for the answer and jumping onto the answer, that anything that reminds them of what could be an answer, they're jumping to. But there was a guy who took my 2.5-hour presentation from the BEM conference and was going to do a summary for his viewers. And he hunted hard, then decided I was talking about laser beams from space. He summed it up for them. And I think he meant well, but he just is busy trying to jump to an answer. Because that's what people want so much. They don't realize it's about understanding the evidence, not about naming it.
Absolutely. Well, we've run over our scheduled time, but that's not a problem sort of thing. But
it's been a fascinating show.
It's been an amazing show, yeah. Thank you so much to Andrew for coming on at very short notice, and to Dr. Judy Wood for even shorter notice coming on to have a joining the discussion. It's been absolutely fantastic, and
yes,
we really got to do it again.
Yeah, no problem.
And you're both welcome back anytime you want. The sooner the better.
Thank you. Well,
thanks.
Yeah. It's just about getting the information out there, and just having an intelligent discussion.
Yeah, and I think having a discussion like this, is hopefully helpful to people, because they can see that we're just a group of people trying to sort of work this madness out in some way. We're not, you know, we don't have an agenda, we don't have a script. We've each done certain things, you know, to try and move us to a better situation than we're in now, and you know, that's currently all we're trying to do.
I can confirm we do not have a script. I can't even rustle anything to sort of even think that we do.
Okay. So, go on, Nick.
I'm just going to play the intro tune because I haven't got one loaded up.
Okay.
Oh, okay, yeah. Great.
That's brilliant. Okay, we'll be back again next week for more discussion. Thank you so much to our guests, Andrew Johnson and Dr. Judy Wood. And thank you again, Dr. Judy Wood, for your wonderful work.
We'll
see you again next week.
Bye.